Welcome to the People Powered Business Podcast. I'm your host, Christy Lee Billett. If you employ staff, engage contractors, or rely on people to help deliver your products or services, you're in the right place. Join us each week as we dive in to uncover what makes people tick, learn the best strategies and tactics to build an amazing team, and most importantly, discover how you, the business owner or leader, can unleash the power of your people to help create the successful business you deserve. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to episode number 10 of the People Powered Business Podcast. I'm your host, Christy Lee. Thank you so much for joining me here today. I do really appreciate the time you're spending listening to the show today, and I hope whatever you're up to, you are having a fantastic day. Now, in today's episode of the People Powered Business Podcast, we are lucky enough to have another special guest join us, and her name is Chandra Moran. Now, Chandra is an award-winning radio promotions and marketing director. She is a professional results coach, a facilitator, an internationally accredited money breakthrough coach, and co-author of an international best-selling book, Elevate Your Success. Chandra is the founder of The Transit Lounge, a boutique leadership consultancy which specializes in working with women who have had super successful careers and want to transition into starting and growing their own businesses. She is the creator of the CEOU coaching framework, and she hosts her very own weekly podcast called The Transit Lounge. Chandra is passionate about assisting women to earn great money doing what they love without burning out. Now, the inspiration for today's episode of the podcast, in fact, came from me listening to Chandra's podcast. And in particular, there was an episode I was listening to where she was talking about what people are tolerating in their lives. And it was around this concept of tolerance and our ongoing tolerance to things that are actually really, really bugging us. And as I was listening to that particular episode of the podcast around tolerance, it hit me like a boulder to the head that I see business owners, employers, leaders, and managers tolerating things from their teams which really, really bug them all the time. I see them tolerating and putting up with things until they crack. Now, what I see happen time and time again is when the leader and manager gets to the point where they crack, what they are in fact reacting to is the chasm that has formed between their expectation and when they started tolerating these little niggles at that expectation and where they've hit now, which is breaking point. And of course, what inevitably happens is when they eventually crack, the employee is dumbfounded because they don't see the chasm. All they see is the reaction that has occurred to the last little push, the last little change that they've made. And so to them, the manager's reaction appears like an entire overreaction to such a small thing because they're not seeing the chasm that has formed. And the reason that they can't see that is because they didn't know about it. Because the employer has been tolerating it and the business owner hasn't addressed it, they don't know it's an issue. So they see this complete overreaction and have no idea what's going on. And the manager has hit complete breaking point where they're so frustrated and can't see or can't understand why the employee doesn't understand what's going on. Now, if you're nodding your head to this, and I can tell you I have personally been here before and I have seen many businesses in the same situation, you are not alone. We are all humans and we are all guilty of this. And it really comes down to, in many cases, the fact that we don't want to have the tough conversation. We don't want to have the confrontation and we just let it slide to the point where we hit breaking point. And as I was listening to Chandra unpack all of this in her episode of her Transit Lounge podcast episode, I just thought that this was an episode that I had to record for you as the business owners to see what you're tolerating in your workplace. And I thought, what better way to do that than to ask Chandra to come on the show and have a discussion with me about that. So I look forward to bringing you this interview that I conducted with Chandra, and she shares some fantastic knowledge and insights insights and really unpacks the whole concept for us. And I'm really incredibly grateful that she was able to join me, and I hope you enjoy the discussion that we have. Now, of course, for those of you who are interested, I will put all of Chandra's details in the show notes, including a link to her podcast and where you can connect with her on LinkedIn and her website as well. So that will all be in the show notes for you. But without further ado, let's jump straight into the interview and welcome to the show, Chandra Moran. Chandra, hello and welcome to the People Powered Business Podcast.
Hello, Christy Lee, you lovely thing. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great, thanks. How are you?
I'm very happy to be talking with you. Working from home, haven't had a lot of people interaction today.
So. It's good to see someone else sometimes.
Yes, like, oh, human being.
Yeah, I'm happy to see an adult other than my children at the moment after the homeschooling experience we've been having. It's tough times. But
I can imagine.
Yes, yeah, no, so we're all working from home, so either Chandra or myself may very well have noises in the background and we'll just roll with that, so bear with us.
Yeah.
Excellent. So I've given everyone a little bit of a background about yourself and your business in the introduction, but why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, tell everyone a little bit about what it is you do and what you're most passionate about right now.
So my name's Chandra. As we've spoken about before, it's a bit of an unusual name, but I'm not too precious about how it comes out, Chandra. My business is called The Transit Lounge, and I specialize in working with women who have had a successful career and now sort of are at that point of wanting to transition into working for themselves. And really that's come about because of my own history with being a bit of a workaholic, which I know we've talked about a bit too, and I guess wanting to help people that are in that situation of on a bit of a treadmill with work to be able to see other options and opportunities of what they could do and to do work that they love and to have that be something that's sustainable for them and helps them create, you know, a true sense of well-being. In terms of things that I'm passionate about, quite a few things, but from a work context, really passionate about helping women that have got an idea for a business to help them, I guess, have a sounding board, an objective person that can help them to bring some more clarity to that idea and to see how they could start to put steps in place to bring that to life, really, and to make sure that it's not just doing something and being busy for the sake of busy, but that it does actually align with them creating the kind of life and work that they really want.
Awesome. Wonderful. Yeah. Now, I guess the inspiration for today's episode of the podcast actually came from an episode of your podcast, the Transit Lounge podcast that I was listening to. Mm-hmm. I think I was out on a walk or a run one day, and you were discussing this concept of tolerance and what people tolerate in their lives. And you were coming at it from a slightly different angle, but I immediately just joined the dots to how I see this play out in the business world and in the clients that I deal with.
Yeah.
So, you know, today I guess our discussion is around that and how we see that play out in life and in business, and how we might pick it up early and also, you know, just deal with it and hit it a bit head on, because it's something that I see so often in businesses, and leaders and business owners are so guilty of this because we like to avoid conflict and we just put up with things that we shouldn't. And so when I heard your podcast, I thought that is a great topic, and that's what prompted me to reach out and invite you on the podcast to talk about that today. So awesome. Thank you for the inspiration. And I'm excited to talk about this. So you've just described yourself as a recovering workaholic and working largely with women from those corporate backgrounds, like you come from yourself, and I know you work a lot in the space of having the right money mindset so people can really dial into that to create that business life. Business and life that they love. So I'm going to assume that the concept of tolerating is one that you've either experienced firsthand or you've seen in some of the clients that you work with, or possibly both. Yeah. Why do you think as humans we're so bad at this?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like, and as you said, I have experienced it myself when I was in various past lives in terms of it being different employed roles, of with hindsight looking back and seeing the things that I tolerated either from my managers and leaders in different organizations that I was part of, and also things that I tolerated from team that reported to me. So I guess it is that interesting thing that, you know, you can look both ways. And then also as someone who's self-employed and I work for myself, looking at things, observing in clients and also providers that that I hire. So it kind of really does run the full gamut. But in terms of why I think we're so bad, potentially there's different reasons depending on the role that you're in. But for me, I think sometimes it has been when I was an employee, for example, things that I was tolerating, I put up with them for a lot longer than I ideally would have for various reasons. When I was in radio a long time ago now, probably 10, 12 years ago or something now, there were things that I was tolerating in that role where I put up with them because there was a lot about the role that I really liked and I was rationalizing, almost negotiating with myself about, well, if I want all this good stuff, I just have to accept these kind of annoying things as part of the package. Yeah. So it was that rationalization, I think. And then if I move forward, went to when I was an employee working with a learning and development company, I was the head of people and operations at that company, and they had a change in CEO and the sort of values shifted in the organization. And there was a lot that I felt very conflicted about for quite a long time, and a lot of things where I know my instinct was like, oh, I don't know about that. And, you know, little red flags coming up. And that was probably when I was really starting to think about extracting and doing my own thing. But things like, how will I pay all the mortgages? Because we've got, you know, mortgage and investment properties and things like that. How will we pay for all of that? And, but I love the people that I work with. So again, it was a different kind of negotiation of, I could see all the stuff that was annoying, triggering, out of alignment, but I wasn't prepared to take action because of fear of what that might mean. So that was a really long answer to
that was a great answer.
But I feel like there's always some kind of fear about, well, what will happen if I confront this? And am I prepared to accept what might be on the other side of it? And it's way easier to just put up with it and hope that stay safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what you've said there about negotiating with yourself, I think that happens across all those different scenarios where we see this tolerating, is that it's a negotiation of, I could deal with it and I could, you know, approach it and there'd be conflict and that would be uncomfortable, but then, you know, that person's really good at that, or like you said, I love the team I work with, or when the change happens without you, so a new CEO comes in that completely, you know, and inevitably when that happens in any business, unless they really tapped into the vision that they walked into, they change because they want to take control and they want to steer it in their own direction, and that's their legacy that they want to leave. So they quite often do steer the business in a different direction, and everyone that's there, you either, it's kind of an instant gut feel, you're kind of either with them or not with them a lot of the time. Sometimes that can change, but quite often it's an immediate, I love what this person's doing, I'm going to follow them, or an immediate, this doesn't sit right with me.
I thought of another context where it's interesting when you start to think back to these of where I tolerated things from team that reported me to me. And when I think about why that was, there was definitely a big part of me wanting to believe in the best of this person and not actually seeing what was really there. And also probably thinking about, what does that mean if I confront that team member that I really want to have worked out, either because I backed them in the recruitment process, or there was a personal connection there, that it got in the way of leadership judgment of being able to kind of see, actually, I, the team, the organization are tolerating these things that actually need to be addressed. But if we address them, do we have to recruit again? Yeah. Do I have the time? Do I have the energy? Maybe if I just keep coaching them and supporting them that they'll get there in the end.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think that's another kind of way that it can show up too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's all those things that will have to happen if you do deal with it that stop you from taking action a lot of the time.
Yes.
And when you, thought about this concept and recorded the podcast, was there like an aha moment that you kind of went, oh, my God, you know, I've seen this show up so many times. This is a really important topic, or had you been having a lot of conversations with clients around it, or has it been something that you've always just been, since you've flagged it, been really, you know, conscious of?
Great question. It was a couple of those things. So I'm a Gemini, so I never like to just have one of anything. Right. Often there's always like a little collection of things. But my memory from that podcast episode was that I had been having a number of conversations with people where they'd been talking about certain things, and I know that I'd heard them talk about it before. Mm. One particular person comes to mind now who was employed at that time in an organisation where there was a bit of a values conflict going on, a lack of clarity around her role, that law of exchange in terms of delivery and expectation and all of that. And she wasn't a client, but this is a conversation. And I know that, you know, we had this conversation many times before, and she just was putting up with it and putting up and putting up with it. And so I think that was one thing that I was getting to that point of frustration with myself, of like, why is it that these really smart, savvy, and in this instance, particularly women, are putting up with all of these things and by default saying this is okay? And it really pissed me off.
Yeah.
And it just makes me frustrated. Go, actually, you know, you're allowed to say, here's the line. Mm. And in fact, you know, there's things that you can do that don't mean that you're quitting or firing someone on the spot or anything like that. There's things you can do rather than just have this accumulation be constantly, you know, weighing you down.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that accumulation point was another question I was going to ask you. You talked about this in the podcast. I think you called it accumulated tolerances.
Yeah.
So explain that concept to us.
Well, that's probably what I call a Chandraism.
I'm going to use it. So.
Yeah, go for it. I just make up words sometimes. But really what I think I meant by that when I said it was the, you know, the little things that happen and you just kind of go, oh, that's annoying, but it's not big enough to make a big deal about it. I don't want to look like I'm being a super bitch or overreacting or any of that. And so you kind of let it go through to the keeper. But what happens is, they do kind of all accumulate, they add up and that can get to a point where all of a sudden there's a flare up where there is a overreaction that comes in at some point, because in the moment that you decide that's it, that's the thing, and you blow your stack, then you just look like a crazy person. But you're not actually just responding to that one little tolerance, you're actually responding to the accumulated ones.
Yeah.
I think in psychology they call it, in when you fight with a partner or whatever, they call it kitchen sinking, where you put everything all into the one sink and it's like the whole thing is just all terrible. Whereas if you deal with or acknowledge each of the tolerances as they come up, then you're far more likely to be able to resolve a situation rather than let it get to that boiling point where you're not really going to be able to be your best in that moment as a leader or a team member or whatever your role is. So it's always better to avoid that build-up. It's like plaque on your teeth. You know, you don't want to let that go too long.
No, definitely not. And I think this accumulated tolerance, this is where I see it show up in businesses most often, particularly small business, actually, but all businesses. And I think it comes down to largely just wanting to avoid any form of conflict. So, you know, I think I see managers a lot where they've got an employee and they know that this employee is meant to be operating within these parameters. And then one day they just take a little step outside of that, and it immediately there's a gut feel reaction when they go, I'm not really okay with that, but they don't deal with it. Like you said, they just let it go to the keeper. And then over time, they're edging further and further out from where they're meant to be. And by the time their manager or their leader finally loses it and really, you know, often it becomes a massive issue, which it never needed to be, the employee standing there like you said, thinking that their manager is crazy.
Yeah.
And they're completely overreacting because they're reacting to the one tiny change that the employee's done that day in the employee's mind. Mm-hmm. But in the manager's mind, they're reacting from point A to where they are now. So it's just, it's a far greater thing that they think they're reacting to. And I see it with, you know, staff that might turn up a couple of minutes late and then suddenly they're 15 minutes late every day and they start reacting it. And at this point, the staff member said, I'm 1 minute later than I was yesterday. But in fact, they're half an hour later than their original start time by this stage. And it's those little things. And often they start out as tiny, you know, little things that can just blow up. And it's that avoiding of that initial, just having that simple conversation to say, hey, did you realise, or, you know, around here, this is how we do things, that they don't do. And it inevitably, every time it will lead to someone calling me saying, I've got someone that I need to exit out of my business. When we go back to why, it's because they've tolerated something for far too long and it's become, it's become the norm in the employee's mind. So I think that I see all the time with our clients, definitely.
And I think that it's also a bit of a learnt behaviour where you, if we look at it through that small business lens, if you have become accustomed to wanting to be liked and, you know, have everyone get along and you're going for that kind of, we're just like a big family kind of vibe. Lots of people see that as really great. And in fact, one of the organizations that I used to work in used that sort of language often and would say, you know, we're like a family around here and that's how we treat each other and everyone. And the owners of the business were very passionate about that approach. But I had multiple conversations with team who actually were saying, no, you are not my family and I do not expect you to be my family. You are my boss or my whatever, and what I expect is clear parameters, clear instructions. And so sometimes even though the owner of the business or the leader in the business is thinking they're doing something great culturally, they're actually not, because I'm a big one for believing that people want to be led. There is a certain comfort and sense of confidence that comes from knowing actually there is someone in charge and they know where we're going and they value my input and I know my piece of the puzzle and there's clear boundaries and I know that I'm doing a good job because I'm operating within those. And I think that can be part of it is the requirement for courage on the part of the leader or the business owner to be willing to create the culture and set the boundaries around what's expected and be okay with being a little bit uncomfortable initially. Because I believe if they set, I'm sure you've got great advice around how to do this, but if they set that expectation early in the onboarding process around here's how we give feedback and it includes formal structured feedback and it includes on the fly feedback and it's not a criticism. It's about ensuring everyone understands what's expected and you can raise things with me that I might not be aware of or vice versa. It just becomes a culture where feedback is part of the way we do things around here instead of, oh crap, I must be in trouble because I'm getting some sort of having a feedback conversation.
Yeah. And we see that all the time. The employees say to us, I've got no idea whether I'm doing a good job, but I'm always told when I'm doing a bad job. So they only hear maybe at their annual performance review, which is way too, you know, far apart, or when something's gone awry. And it's usually not a simple thing that they're going to deal with. But you're right, people need structure. And where there are no rules and there are no boundaries, people will make up their own because that's human nature. Yep. And that's not what most employees want. So you're absolutely right. Without that, employees actually don't want generally to be part of the family. It's not what they want.
It's not what they're there for.
No. And I see this with business owners, particularly they expect employees to have as much, I don't want to say pride, because a lot of employees do have pride in the workplace, but they expect them to treat the business the same as they do. And I say to them, it's not their business.
No.
It's a job for them, and they'll do a great job if you do all the right things, but it's not their business, so don't expect them to treat it necessarily like it is. I think that's a false expectation. It's just setting someone up for failure.
Yeah, agree. My husband is a little bit like that, where he has a small business, and when he you know, shares with me some frustrations that he's got with the team. In fact, he mentioned one the other day. I was, you know, prepping dinner and he'd just come home and he said something, and without thinking, you know, I said something to him about is there a checklist? Like, it was something that the staff member had not done before they left, and he was frustrated that they hadn't done it because it's part of their job, and and it meant he had to stay back a bit later to do this thing. And he'd probably go, "Why are you talking about me?" I'm not, anyway, and I said, I just eat chopping carrots, and I said, "Is there a checklist?" And he looked at me and I said, "You know, a checklist that before she can go home, that she goes through that checklist to make sure it's done. Or if she can't get it done before she has to go, she would have to flag and say, 'Hey, I have to go, but I didn't get to do this.' So at least you're aware." Mm. And he just looked at me blankly with that feeling like, "Why am I married to you?"
Yeah. I'm not going to admit it, is what he was thinking.
And he goes, And he said something. And I said, "Well, it's always better to sort of look at the system than blame the person." Mm. And then if there's a system there and then it's still, there's something falling down. And so I just went back to chopping the carrots. But yeah. That's the thing. Like where his frustration was coming from was that feeling of, but she knows. Mm. And it's important for us to be able to do a good job in the business. And it's like, well, yes, but, you know, she also finishes at a certain time and, you know, has other things. So I think it's that, like, having reasonable expectations of the input that your team are going to do and what your job is in that will enable them to do that by knowing what's expected of them.
Mm, absolutely. And the other thing they can't do is read your mind. So, they can't. So in your mind, it might be really important, but unless that's really been clearly communicated, they can't read your mind. They can't see that you're frustrated because, you know, you've broken a boundary or you've just stepped over the line a little. So, you can't expect them to be in your head. It might be doing your head in, but they don't know. So unless you communicate. No. So if we know that this causes issues and we tolerate things way more often than we should, how can we as leaders and managers of teams, I guess, identify what we're doing earlier so we can put a stop to it? How can we improve?
Yeah, and look, this is one where it definitely takes a healthy dose of courage, I think, to be open to this, because no one really ever wants to look at themselves first. They'd much rather be able to blame and go, if only that person would do that thing or stop doing that thing. And if that person would start doing that thing, like, it's much easier. And even it's actually often easier to see externally than internally sometimes. So I think the first step is really being willing to look at your own self-awareness and to try on. I'm big for experimenting with projects in work and, you know, see how they go so you're not putting too much pressure on. And even looking at this as a bit of an experiment and going, okay, well, if I'm going to do a bit of self-analysis and having a look at, well, what are the things that I am doing and how might they impact or contribute to this situation, being able to be brave with that and to be open to seeing what's there and accepting the experiment or the mantra around, I don't think it's a mantra, I think it's the approach, let's just call it that, of that we judge other people by how we see and experience them and the result perhaps of what they are doing or not doing, but we judge ourselves by what we intended.
Mm.
And so when we know, well, I didn't intend to offend you or I didn't intend to yell at that person. I was just concerned or whatever. Mm. We use that intention to rationalize the result.
Yeah.
But we're not able to be aware of what the intention was of the team member, for example. So we speculate and often, because our brains are wired that way, we assume the worst.
Mm.
And so I think there's that of kind of going, okay, so I didn't intend that, but if I look at the results, then the feedback might be suggesting there's something that I could do differently.
Mm. It's that seek first to understand, isn't it, before taking action. It's I think dialing into, you've got some intuition and a gut feel or a little flare inside you that says, I'm not okay with this. So rather than letting it go, you've got to, as you said, experiment, find some ways to approach that person and deal with it, but approach it from a seek first to understand perspective, because we're not in their shoes. We don't know what experience has led them to what's happening at the moment. You know, and certainly if there's no excuse, then we can deal with that. But to understand first before, you know, making a decision about how you're going to act, I think is important, isn't it?
Yeah. And also I think when I think about it, there's a situation that I'm currently in with a provider that I work with, and there's been some things happening and there's a couple of glitchy things. And exactly as you're saying, there was early on, so probably a couple of weeks ago, there was like these things where it's like, oh, that's a bit annoying. And, oh, I'll just do this. And so I did a couple of those sort of situations where I'll just the fix it myself approach. And then I got to the point where it's like, actually, I don't know. I'm like, I'm starting to reassess the value of the exchange here.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, you know, intending on making it a big deal, but I just wanted to flag that there was some miscommunication happening that was leading to a little bit of double handling. And so I communicated via email to this person and said, look, here's some of the things that have happened in the last couple of weeks. Some have been good. Here's a couple of things that haven't sort of met what I thought and the impact of that. And so here's what I'm proposing we could do differently to make sure we're all on the same page. Let me know what you think.
Yeah.
And as a result, that person has like way over delivered in sort of trying to win me over and show how she's going to change things and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And it really, it wasn't, I felt a bit uncomfortable with it because I don't necessarily want to feel like I'm rocking the boat and being the big nasty with too many expectations. But then I thought about it and I thought, well, actually, you know, I'm paying for a service or an outcome. And so respectfully for me to say, here's what met my expectations, here's what didn't, has opened up a different way of moving forward.
Mm.
But it does take that moment of being a little bit brave, of being willing to call it out and to do that in a respectful way, which as you're saying is like, you know, also not just, you know, flying firebombs.
Yes.
To actually be sort of observation and I often use the fair feedback model as a frame of reference of how to sort of bring up things, especially if they're a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, and I think your idea there of coming to them with a solution is good as well, and you can only do that with your staff when you understand firstly what's happening. But if you can come to them with a proposed solution rather than expecting it all to sit on their shoulders, I think that shows them that you're engaged in you know, fixing whatever the problem is, but that you're also leading with that example of a solutions focus approach. So I think that solutions, you know, coming with a solution is a great way to approach it as well.
Yeah, questioning to find out more and potential solutions open up a discussion instead of you know, making, you know, declarations of
fix it now or else.
Yes,
that's not the way to go. And you talk in your podcast about you give a quote from Napoleon Hill saying, "Don't wait, the time will never be just right." And I think that is something that many people are guilty of, and probably you and I included at various times.
Yes, but sure.
That's the thing, you know, managers and employees in dealing with their managers as well, it goes both ways. They wait for the perfect time or think they're waiting for the perfect time, but that's just another excuse to not deal with it, isn't it?
It's a total cop-out.
Yeah. And
I can say that because I've done it myself many times. I think I may be a little bit better now than I used to be. But it is, I think it's another form of rationalizing with yourself that's designed to protect you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not helpful from a leadership perspective. And it's even beyond leadership of your team or your organization, leadership just of yourself. And I know we've talked, you know, you've heard me talk in the past about my coaching framework, which is the CEOU model.
Yeah.
And that the premise of that is that regardless of your actual role or your job title, every individual is the CEO of brand you and is responsible for how you interact with others and the results that you create or don't create. So I always use that as a checking point that if I'm being the CEO of me right now, am I showing up in the way that I want to be known to be? And it's really freaking uncomfortable sometimes, like really. And when you just kind of go, I don't want to think about that. Don't want the responsibility. But when you can really hand on heart, you know, check in on that, that's when you have to be brave and go, well, this is you. And how you show up and how you interact is teaching others how to treat you. And it's actually you building your own level of self-respect.
Yeah, so I think failure to set boundaries, that's basically an invitation for a lack of respect in many ways, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And whether that's somebody palming their work off to you, people just picking up the phone and asking you something instead of actually looking either on an intranet or other files and things that exist. Mm. It is a form of, testing the boundaries.
Yeah.
And it's your responsibility to teach people what you expect. And part of that is you showing how things are done and how you communicate. And that thing about, waiting for the right time, I think sometimes there could be instances where actually right at the moment, lots of people around or whatever it may not be. So you may need to still pick your moment. But generally speaking, sooner rather than later is always the better time.
1,000%.
Yeah. But having ways to do that, so that you're not overreacting and you're also not pussyfooting around too, can be helpful. And I'm sure that's something that you help your clients with too. Mm. There's a client that comes to mind from a while ago, and he and his wife had a business that was, had been going well, and then they boomed like crazy in a short period of time. And so they had rapid growth with team. Mm. And he particularly, one of the owners, really would get frustrated with people and fire up.
Mm.
And then he was annoyed that people were scared of him. And it was like one of those things where you're like, okay, but let's look at really what's going on there. And yes, there was always explanations as they should have known better and rah, rah, but because he was kind of inelegant in his way of giving feedback, the intention that he had was good.
Yes.
The message he had was good. He really did want the best for the business, for the client, for the team, for all of that. Yep. But his delivery totally sucked.
Yeah.
And so it's again, it can take some discipline around how you do this so that you're not firing up in the moment in front of other people and creating more of an issue.
Mm.
And you're also not at the other end of the spectrum, which is holding off and going, oh, well, I don't want to do it inappropriately, so I'll wait till their next performance review in October. So there's got to be some tools and things that you have in place to make it easy for you and for the team member to not make it a big deal beyond what it is. And I remember telling you all these random stories today, when I worked in radio, and I ended up in my last role was I was program director, and in that role you're responsible for the ratings results. You're managing all the on-air talent, you're overseeing the music that's played, you're overseeing the marketing strategies, alignment with clients, all of it. I liked to think of myself as a really approachable leader and all that kind of thing, but I had a couple of moments in my leadership roles where I would say to someone just in passing, Jeremy, when you're finished on air, just come in and say, just for a quick chat in the office or whatever, something like that. And I would be wanting to let them know about a client campaign that's coming up that they might want to sponsor something and talk about some ideas or whatever. But I would find out afterwards that person had literally been shitting themselves.
Oh, no.
Worried about what was going to happen when they came for this chat. And for me as a leader, it was not even on my radar that uncertainty would be there.
Yeah.
But then I had to take that on as feedback that, okay, so does that mean I'm not giving enough on-the-fly positive feedback or that I'm not communicating well enough that, just because we're having a chat doesn't mean you're in trouble? It's that willingness to be able to look at what's actually being received in my communication and interactions, not just what am I thinking and knowing is going on.
It's all about how someone else receives it and perceives it over in a, as you said, your intention could be great.
Yeah.
But if that's not how it's received at the other end, that's all undone. All your good work is undone. So it's something, to be really aware of.
Yeah.
So I guess in finishing up, do you have any, other top strategies or tactics that we as leaders can implement right now in organisations to help bed down this tolerance around the place? Is there anything, I mean, you've shared heaps of great ideas with us, but is there anything else that you wanted to, I guess, finish off with?
There's two things that come to mind. One is a really practical thing, which I know has been very helpful for me in the past, particularly when I was managing quite a big team. And so therefore the tolerances could be coming thick and fast on many, days. Yes. And one in particular was where I had a big team that were reporting to me. A lot of them were casuals or part-time, so they weren't necessarily around as often as the full-timers. And so it was very easy to let those small tolerances just slip through. You know, as you said, 10 minutes late today, not in the right uniform, or, things like that. Mm. And so one of the things that I suggest, I love a good spreadsheet.
Me too. You and me both.
And so I started a document that was like a grid where I just had, I have to try and remember, it was a while ago, the date, the incident or the issue, and the impact of that, and then notes of status or anything else. And so if something happened and it was, a minor indiscretion, and obviously I may have said something about, hey, you're 10 minutes late, but they've got to go because they've got to get to where they've got to be, I would make a note in the document, and so that then, maybe over a month, or however long, I would be able to go and look at that and see, is there a pattern of behaviour? Mm-hmm. And for some of them, it was a pattern. It was like every Monday they were late or whatever else. And to be able to then have that as a reference point for a booked conversation with them, to be able to say, without shopping listing and going, on the 17th of February you did this and blah, 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 but to be able to say, that there's a pattern of behaviour here that suggests that you're not taking this seriously enough, or you've got a challenge around punctuality or whatever. It for me as a leader, it gave me a sense of two things. Clarity that I was not being crazy person. That it also wasn't just a personality conflict. Sometimes it might have been that there was actually, it felt like this person was really freaking annoying me, but actually it was once, and it's like, and then it's been fine. So it was good to kind of sort through that. Yeah. But also in the conversation itself, it added weight to be able to say, have something respectful to respond to when they say it was only 10 minutes or it was only one time or whatever the dismissive comment might have been. And also it just sort of, I guess, helped them to be able to see that I'm taking this seriously and these minor indiscretions are not going through to the keeper, so that we could then say, what can we put in place that we agree moving forward is going to help. So that's a really practical thing that for managing your own sanity.
Yes.
It's also helpful for conversations, and especially depending on the issues, it can also help if you are in the unfortunate situation of needing to perhaps start to engage performance management conversations where you've got some reference points of a history of it, rather than it being, okay, now we're starting from ground zero and off we go. So that's a practical thing that you can do, especially if you've got some team that you think are really kind of
just flying on the edge.
Yes, exactly. The other thing that I think is useful for people to do is actually to step into those shoes of being the CEO of you and to ask yourself and to create some boundaries for yourself about what am I prepared to tolerate. And where are the boundaries of what is not acceptable? That's a trigger for me, that's a conversation. So that you kind of have, it's almost like creating your own code of conduct. For me to be the leader that I want to be, here are the things that I accept, and here are the things that I don't, or here's the boundary, or whatever makes sense in your role. I think that even you having that clarity for yourself helps you have something to hang on to when you've got that moment where it's like, oh, and you're questioning, that you want to be able to go, for me to be on brand, to live my own values, to be the kind of person I want to be, I need to have this conversation even though it's uncomfortable. And you know, another story quickly that comes
to mind
was when, I was in radio and my boss was someone who was really very highly regarded in Western Australia in the industry, had been around a very long time, very experienced. And over time, his mood, shall we say, and energy was going through a bit of a dark patch. And over time, I had quite a few people come to me and say, what's going on with him? And they were concerned and they were also a bit like, everyone's on eggshells.
Yes.
And then it got to a point where a few people, you know, all confided in me that they were almost feeling afraid.
Mm.
Not that he would hurt them in any way, but that feeling of when they saw him come around the corner, literally they were steeling themselves, like, what is it going to be me today? And what, like that.
Yeah.
And I just thought, for me to be the leader I want to be, I have to say something.
Yeah.
And so I had to pick my moment of when to do it to be respectful to him as well.
Mm.
And so I did that and I came in super early one morning because he would normally be in quite early. So I knew there wouldn't be too many people around and we could have more of a private conversation. And I opened the conversation with him by saying, I want to have a conversation with you about something, even though I feel very uncomfortable having this conversation.
And vulnerability.
And he looked at me from behind his desk and he was like, right. And I said, because I'd be doing a disservice to you and to the station if I don't talk to you about it. And it opened up me feeling a little bit safer to say what I was saying. And it opened up that he had not been aware of what impact had been of his mood, and he actually thought he had been hiding stuff that was going on for him better than he actually had been. And he was, he said, I'm committed to, you know, fixing that. And he was very appreciative of me bringing it to his attention. So I think in that moment, it could have been very easy for me to go, you know what, it's not my job.
Mm.
He's my boss. I don't know, I don't have to. But that was about me and my moral code, my leadership code. It wasn't comfortable, but it allowed me to feel good about who I was being and how I was representing the team who didn't feel they had the courage to have that sort of a conversation.
Mm.
So,
and that's the thing about being a great leader as well. It's not about the position you're in. You know, you might be a great leader and be talking to someone above you or beside you, but being a great leader is about, as you just said, setting the example and doing what's right for you and your values and the business's values. And that does involve courage and vulnerability. And they're things that we probably didn't anticipate chatting about today, but I think they're both really important messages because they're both critical to be a great leader. If you're not displaying both at different times, you know, when it's appropriate, you're not being an honest leader, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And the third thing that's a practical thing that once you've got your own little kind of manifesto, if you like, about the type of leader you want to be, is to develop your own, if you don't already have one, method of how you give feedback. So I mentioned earlier the FAIR feedback model. There's another one, SBI situation.
There's lots of different impact ones. Yeah.
Yeah. So find something that you can practice with that means that in the moment that you can tap into that and give yourself a little goal of using that framework to give positive feedback. Because the more you give positive feedback, the less focus there is on the constructive feedback.
Yes.
Whereas when there's only the constructive or somebody's in trouble, then that's all they see. But what's the ratio that they say that you have to do of positive to
5 to 1-ish?
Something like that.
A few different research, but it's about 5 to 1.
Yeah. So then kind of go, okay, I want to make sure that at least once a day I'm giving two team members some positive on the fly feedback.
Yep.
Just make it part of your DNA and then it just becomes part of how the team works.
Yeah. There's a great example of that I heard on another podcast. I think it was a very senior manager at Disney, and he would start his day with, it was basically an act of gratitude, but it was thanking and acknowledging at least some of the employees, if not all, for something that they'd done. And yep. That was part of his daily practice.
Amazing.
And I think that's the sort of stuff, you know, you hear about the culture at those places and it is amazing. Mm. And it shows at every level of their business, not just internally with their people, but externally with their service to their customers. Mm-hmm. You know, they just live and breathe those values, and different leaders can bring their own. So this particular leader brought that to his role in the business, above and beyond the general values. But I think a company that has those values really embraces and encourages leaders to be the best version of themselves.
Yeah.
And that worked for him. And I think it's a great tool, but as you said, create your own way of doing things, but just be authentic. And yeah, if you just make that, as you said, part of the DNA of how you lead, people will just really warm to it, and you'll have less issues that you have to deal with tolerating anyway if you're doing all of that. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, totally. There's so much. I mean, that is a whole nother piece, isn't it, around, you know, culture and what creates that. But this is, I think, a small part of it, of contributing to we can want to have this great culture, and that takes some time and some discipline to create the sort of environment that you want to have.
Absolutely. Yeah, your culture can't just be about your values up on a wall. And I've seen businesses like that, and their values were everywhere on the wall, on every document I ever read. And I can tell you that those values were not displayed by any of the senior leadership team in that business, and therefore none of the staff. And if you ask the staff to recite the values, they would be able to, because they were literally in front of their face constantly. But nothing about the actions of the leaders showed any of those values in action, and so they're just lip service. That, you know, they're no good to you if they're just a document, or they're just, you know, plucked up on the wall in a nice pretty, you know, frame or something. There's no value there, so you've got to it's got to be embodied at every level, but it's top down.
And you know that how your values show up, you know, partly it does come down to that culture piece of the way we do things around here, and what we tolerate, what we don't tolerate is part of that.
Yeah. So. And communicating that early, like you mentioned earlier, is fundamental. But, you know, failing that, just communicating it at any point is where you need to be. But I loved those strategies that you shared. The Excel spreadsheet is a great one for people that like that. And in the HR world, you know, I'm constantly banging on about document, because we rely on that when stuff goes beyond what it needs to and we have to deal with it. If all I've got is I remember that, there's nothing that we can work with. So if you've got a document, it just gives you just that security of knowing that you've not necessarily dealt with it straight away, but you've got that information and that evidence in a way to deal with. Mm. But those other things that you mentioned as well about being the CEO, you and, you know, owning that leadership style, I think they're all tools and strategies that we can all take away. So thanks for sharing those with us today.
You're welcome. It was great chatting with you.
We could talk about this all day, literally. You and I could not.
Totally.
Oh, it's been great. Well, look, I know you're very busy, so I will let you go, but I do appreciate the time you've spent with me here today. And what I'll do in the show notes is I'll link all of your details up. So if anyone wants to reach out and get in touch with Chandra, find out more about what she does, and in fact, have a listen to her podcast, all of the links will be in the show notes. But the podcast is
The Transit Lounge.
Yep.
And would love anyone, you know, if they're wanting to connect on LinkedIn as well.
Yes, excellent. So we'll put all those details in the show notes. But Chandra, thank you again for your time today, and we'll make sure everyone reaches out to you. And I really appreciate you chatting to me.
Thank you so much, Chrissy Lee.
Wow, what an amazing, inspirational discussion that was. Chandra, I appreciate your time so incredibly much, and I'm sure all of you join me in thanking Chandra for spending that time with us. The way Chandra unpacks and explains things and her insights into both the leadership and the employee perspective and her experience with the clients that she's coached, I think we got a really well-rounded idea of how tolerance is present amongst all of us at many times. Chandra and I certainly went down some rabbit holes in that interview that we weren't anticipating, but that in itself has really inspired me for some future episodes of the podcast. So stay tuned for those, and I think they were great conversations that we had. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, if you'd like to connect with Chandra, I will put a link in the show notes to her website, her LinkedIn profile, and of course her podcast, The Transit Lounge. I'll put a link to The Transit Lounge podcast generally, but also to that particular episode that inspired this show today. And of course, you can go ahead and listen to The Transit Lounge on your favorite podcast listening device there. So just look that up and subscribe to her podcast. As Chandra, I guess, so generously shared with us, some of the conversations about what we're tolerating with our employees at work are not easy to have. And that's a large part of the reason that we as employers and business owners don't have them as quickly as we should. So what I thought I'd do is I've put together for you today a really simple, clear guide as to how you can have difficult conversations with your employees. It's my top tips for having those conversations, and it will just hopefully give you a framework to help you work through those conversations and not let things get to the point of you completely having a breakdown or breaking and getting overreacting with your employees. So if you head over to peoplepoweredbusiness.com and click on episode number 10, you'll be able to get that free download, My Tips for Having Difficult Conversations with Employees. Now, that is also where you're going to be able to get all of Chandra's information and connect directly with her. And if you've enjoyed what she's had to say, then please reach out to her and let her know, because I'm sure she would really love to hear that as well. So again, thank you, Chandra, and I hope you've all enjoyed today's episode. In next week's episode of the People Powered Business Podcast, we're going to be discussing the concept of screening resumes like a ninja. Now, for many of you who are recruiting in the current environment, or depending on where you're located in any environment, you may in fact get absolutely overwhelmed with resumes every time you advertise for a position. So next week's episode, I'm going to talk you through my tactics as to how you can get through that fast and with the best candidates ready for interview at the end. So join us next week for that episode. Now, if you'd like to reach out to us, please go ahead to our Facebook page, People Powered Business, and connect with us there. If you have questions or topics you'd love me to cover in a future episode, I would love you to share them with me, and the Facebook page is a great place for you to do that. You can also, of course, connect with me over at peoplepoweredbusiness.com, grab today's show notes and get in touch with Chandra and grab your free tips for having difficult conversations with employees. Thanks for joining me here today. Have a fantastic rest of your day, and I look forward to speaking with you next week.